The Local Thread.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to La Prensa Habla, Episode 2. My name is Kevin Salinas.
And I am Jessica Molina. I'm so excited to be here today. We have such an exciting, interesting guest, Allende Bonifacio, a professor at UT, an author, a poet, a New Yorker, a former New Yorker, maybe. So many exciting things. But Allende, yes. Welcome.
Glad to be here. It's a pleasure to be here. Thrilled.
First and foremost, thank you for taking the time and, to sit down with us and have a conversation. We're really interested to get to know you, but how are you doing today?
I'm good. I can't complain too much. I mean, the weather is a little rough, but we made it. We're here.
Right. Yeah, no, we'd like to start this off with just learning a little bit about you. So can you tell us just a little bit about where you're from, where you grew up?
So I was born in the Dominican Republic. My family and I arrived. We moved to New York City. We immigrated when I was 6 years old to Brooklyn, New York. And I spent basically my entire, adolescent, early adulthood there. I would travel back and forth to DR often, but I was mostly a New York kid, And I, moved from New York for the first time for grad school, and I was 26 years old, to attend Ohio State. And since moving to Columbus, I've moved back and forth. My first job was back in New York City at City University of New York after my PhD. I did a year in Boston and then found myself here in Toledo after the pandemic, which changed, I think, all our lives. And it was a strange time to be in New York, actually, during the height of the pandemic. It was really bizarre. And that was one of the choices. That was one of the sort of like motivating factors for us to leave. It was like, okay, this is not going to work for us here. And Toledo was just an awesome place that was very welcoming. And career-wise, it made a lot of sense.
Your story is interesting because I actually came from Honduras when I was 6 years old. And cool. When you think of home, where do you think? Do you think of Toledo? Do you think of New York? Or do you think of Dominican?
That's such a good question, by the way, because I'm always thinking about home. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm always like, where is home? And I think for a long time, home was like my block, the block I grew up on. Mm-hmm. That was home. That was my allegiance, was to the block and the people in the community, and that was my people back in Brooklyn. I grew up in a Dominican enclave of Latinos speaking Spanish. Everyone spoke Spanish everywhere. That was what we talked, My mom and dad didn't even learn to, speak English because they didn't have to. It's mm-hmm. just, which came with its challenges. So, my concept of home was challenged when I left New York. When I moved to Columbus, I realized, whoa, I am different. I am not what I thought I was. And this country is not New York City. And I started thinking about home as back east. And I was always sort of gravitating east. And I wanted to be close to the East Coast with Dominican New Yorkers or Latino New Yorkers. And then I had a child, right? And she was born here in Toledo. And I was like, it's different now. Like, home is where these people are. And I don't have that gravitational pull that used to always sort of like force me east. It's not there like it has been, So I think home for me now is where my family is, where my people are, where I feel loved, mm-hmm. That's what home has been. Because when you move so much, you have to, rewire like how you think of home in a way.
You have to get comfortable where you are, right? And that actually makes me think, are your parents here? Are they in Toledo area or are they still in New York?
No. So my dad passed away in 2019, the day before I defended my dissertation. It was incredibly traumatic, that whole exchange. He had a very aggressive form of brain cancer. I write about this in my memoir and a lot of public facing stuff that's out there. And so he was in New York. He was on Long Island. He lived there for a while. My mother, soon after that, they were divorced for many, many years, and she remarried. But soon after he passed, she moved to Lakeland, Florida. So that's like 40 minutes outside of, like, or Tampa, right? Mm-hmm. But my brother and sister and my extended family, they're all there. That's where everyone is. My brother has two kids, and they're there. I mean, my entire family is essentially in New York. So I have no family, like, immediate. Well, I like to joke around, like, I had to create family for you know, in Toledo, mm-hmm. to have family, like, because it's hard to get them to visit. But I have a lot of, I've made friends, I've created community, that has been amazing.
And have you been back to the Dominican since having your daughter?
No.
Do you have plans? What do you miss about that? I'm sure there are places there you consider home too. What do you
absolutely.
Miss?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I miss the campo. I grew up, I was born in the northern part of La República Dominicana, Santiago, in a very, you know, sort of isolated farm village, Juncalito, right? No running water or electricity. Like, you know, that was our life. Clay, like, you know, mm-hmm. our floors were made of, like, hardened clay and things like that. And that was, that had a big, you know, impact in my life. I always, when I was, in fact, thinking about home, that was what home felt like, going back to that little campo. So I want to show my daughter that, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like, last time I was in DR was for my wedding. but we went to Punta Cana. If you know what Punta Cana is, it's resortville. It's like, you know, it's like Bad Bunny says, like, this is not the real, you know what I mean? This is just what
the
you
floors
see.
Weren't made of clay.
No. Maybe if you want to have, like, an experience, right, they would take you to one of those places. But I want to show my daughter and my family, just in general, like, the charm of that place. It's not just mm-hmm. poverty. Yeah, it is poverty. It is hard, but it's also beautiful. Mm-hmm. And those people are beautiful. Those people are resilient, right? Simple.
There's so much life that comes from that way of living, right? So Absolutely. Much personality.
Yeah, yeah. So I missed that, and I want to maybe show her that for sure.
And growing up in New York, so, you know, you're 6 years old, 7 years old, you get to New York. Where's your mindset at that point? What is your family telling you, and what are you going through?
Yeah, I laugh because that is a serious, like, you know, question, and I think a regular one too. Growing up in New York, it was like, watch out. I grew up in a very tough neighborhood. East New York was considered, still is, the murder capital of New York, right? Like, really tough, really hard. You had to watch the colors that you wore in school. I went to Boys and Girls High School, which is a storied high school, actually. It started out as a boys and girls separate co-ed high school with incredible people, like Shirley Chisholm graduated from the, you know, the girls' high school. Isaac Asimov, the science fiction writer, right? But when I got there, it was the first high school in Brooklyn to use metal detectors because kids would be running around the lunchroom with, like, Uzis and things. Like, it was serious. Like, mm-hmm. So I went there not knowing anything about high schools. I chose it because it sounded like a good school. Boys and girls, that sounds like, and I had no, my parents
should
didn't.
Be inclusive.
This should, sounds okay. And I was really into school. Like, you know, and my high school experience changed that. I had to change myself to survive. So my parents would constantly say, watch out, be careful. And then that meant stay at home. You can't go outside. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, naturally you rebel. And then you go outside and then you try to be all the things they don't want you to be. Because they don't understand. Of course they don't understand. They're not, you know, it's a different thing. You're trying mm-hmm. to survive. They don't understand that. You know, so it was, I like to say that my story is one of many transformations, many different selves. Like, and I think it's cool to be many selves. You know, that's, change is great. It keeps us going. And I change, I feel a lot. And a lot of my friends are often like, oh, you change so much. You know, and it's often not a good thing when they say mm-hmm. it. But You know what I mean? But it's like, yeah, I did, and I had to. So yeah, that's how growing up was. It was a constant, like, watch your back. You know, did you watch the news? You know what's going on out there? You know, be safe. And to be honest, you know, that kind of constant paranoid state of mind is even with me today. Like, there are days when I'm like at home, and I live in a very quiet like street, but I'm like, oh, I should probably close my window, the drawer. Like, I don't know. I check the doors, you know, like things like that. Just, it's, you're constantly like that.
And it lives within us, right? And yeah. Even if you move, it lives within you.
Exactly.
So this reminds me, every episode we actually have a word and a dicho. And this episode's word or words is inspired by your work. It is Latino or Latina or Latinx or Latin. What else is there out there?
I think just those three or four. I would like to I'd like to ask you, what's your opinion on all of that whole Latino, Latina, Latinx, the word, right, yeah. And what it means? And
that is a hot topic. Mm-hmm. That is a hot topic. It's been a hot topic since forever. You know, this is, you know, I think, and I, you know, I tell my students all the time, like, it's, I think it's a beautiful thing that we have many words for what we call ourselves. I think we're entitled to a vast vocabulary of words to use as tools for making sense of who we are as people.
Because we're a vast, diverse community, right? Exactly. So there are going to be a lot of words that resonate with different people.
Exactly. And I think everyone is entitled to that and shouldn't be forced to, you know, call themselves something they don't feel comfortable. Like, I tell my students there's an important history behind the word Latino that deals with the U.S. Census. And, like, you know, in the 70s, the government trying to make sense of this growing community that has an incredible voting power now for representation. How do we make sense of who these people are? And Latinos, people of Latin American descent, became one such concept. But even in the 19th century, which I study Hispanophones in the 19th century, people didn't call themselves Latinos. They called themselves Spanish Americans, Hispanophones, Hispanic, because they spoke Spanish, right? Yeah, totally. So Latino is like trying to make sense of this cultural, like, shared identity that we all have. But, you know, obviously some people are like, you know, that doesn't work for me. Latino, Spanish is a gender language, and I don't identify with Latino. As some people who are queer or gender nonconforming, like Latinx, because it opens up a space for identity. Some prefer Latine because Latinx, as has been argued, I think, invalidly, is kind of hard to pronounce for many Spanish speakers. It's like, what is that? It's like a word that was invented in the ivory tower of academia. So that's a legit, you know, criticism. And if that's how you feel, you shouldn't, you know, use it.
I'll be honest. I've never, besides Latinx, like, I'm 100% Latino. Yo hablo español, en mi casa hablamos español, tú sabes. Claro. I had never heard Latinx. And I'm one of those people that I get, I don't want to say triggered by it, but I'm like, I just feel like Latinx is a word that was created by people who haven't had, you said earlier, all of our lives as Latinos, as Hispanics, we're trying to survive, right? Mm-hmm. And when you get past that moment where you're no longer in survival, right, you start to get into all of these things where Latinx, Latino, Latina isn't really a problem, but we're trying to solve it. And I'm like, is this even something that we need to focus on as a Hispanic community, right? I don't know. What are your thoughts about that opinion, I guess, of it?
I think that's legit. I think that's legitimate. I think that we are all, as we've been saying, and this is one of the quotes I love the most by the scholar Ilan Stavins. As Latinos, we're in a constant search for wholeness, a search for making sense of who we are. And yeah, Latinos, I think most of us, a lot of us do feel like the Latinx is a theoretical concept that doesn't apply or is disconnected from the people. And that is a failure of academia, I feel. That is true. That is a failure of academia to actually make sense and explain and touch base and connect traditions, right? That should never be the case. At the same time, there's so much exciting work being done by people who are creating these concepts, like Latinx. Let me give you an example, for instance. The critic, Claudia Milian, fantastic Latinx studies professor, she's written this little book called Latinx with a capital X. And I know a lot of people are like, WTF, what is that?
Right. WTX.
WTX. But it's so cool. So like what she does is she conceptualizes the Latinx. Yes, Latinx is a gender nonconforming concept that some people like to use. At the same time, the X is kind of cool because it opens up a space for like how we use X in our daily lives. Like X as extreme, like the X Games, Malcolm X as a like, you know, reclaiming, you know, one's name and erasing those that are like the enslavers' names. And then the X as a marker of the way that, you know, indigenous and frankly, Latin, Hispanophone people used to sign their names, those who were illiterate, right? They would sign with an X. So like, that's the cool part. Like, it opens up a space that says, look how we are. Like, we can be all this in what we call ourselves. At the same time, and I'm a big believer in this, we shouldn't push concepts on anyone. Like, you know, like if whatever you feel, some people don't even like Latinos. Some people might say, I'm Dominican American, right? Like, that's what I am. Or I'm just Dominican, you know? But I think that the possibility of I think we should, I love having a broad spectrum of words to pull from. I feel like this today. I feel like Latinx today. I feel like Latina today. I feel like Dominican today. I'm just Dominican today. In fact, on my way here, I was listening to some Perico Ripiao, some stuff that my dad used to listen to. It's like very, you know, tacky Dominican music. I'm like, I'm just Dominican today. I'm just Dominican today. But yeah, that's what I think about that.
And I like what you said earlier about, you know, Latinx opening up that door to the LGBTQ community. I've never thought about it like that, honestly. But I do like that you pointed that out because that makes more sense to me. I consider myself a Latino, Jessica probably a Latina, right? And then someone who isn't in either here nor there would probably say Latinx, which is a growing, what is LGBTQ is community is growing. Absolutely. In the Hispanic industry, which is another big controversy in itself. So, you know, that does make sense. Jessica, what do you think about the whole topic?
I think this entire conversation, and especially going into the next segment, that it's going to be we're going to learn how diverse our history is as a people. And so having a variety of words, I think, makes a lot of sense for us. But it's just interesting that, you know, one word can feel so inclusive to one person and feel so off-putting to another, right? And I think that we, as a community, even here in Toledo, are so diverse and sometimes at odds, right? And the words are no different. I feel like the words land us there too, but you had mentioned even about your personal life, Ayendi, that you're constantly on a search for identity, not search for identity, but that you flow through different identities. Sure. And I think that's what the variety of the words do.
And we do have to wrap up this first segment, but I do have a question for La Prensa Habla. Tú, como hispano, ¿cómo te identificas? Latino, Latina, Latinx, o hispano en general? But we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to La Prensa Habla. My name is Kevin Salinas.
And I'm Jessica Molina. We are here with Ayendi Bonifacio, and we just got done talking about Latinos, but I know in your work, I don't know if it's appropriate to call you a historian. I know you study newspapers. Can you technically be called a historian?
I guess a literary historian.
A literary historian. So I know that you have said Latinos is a new world concept. Or that Latinos didn't necessarily arrive in the United States, that the United States arrived on Latinos. So talk about that.
When I say that Latinos are a new world concept, you know, that refers to, I mean, our history of colonization. And by the way, Latinos are a new world concept, just like the United States is a new world concept, just like America is a new world concept. Because prior to, colonization projects by the Spanish crown, the French crown, the British, the Dutch, all of the incredibly powerful European powers, prior to those expeditions, there weren't Latinos here. What we had were indigenous people that had been calling what we call the Americas home for centuries. And the idea of a Latino person became, a reality once the process and often the mixing, right, that was often a product of coercion and rape, then the importation of African slaves, right, into the colonies for labor and the production of capital. It wasn't until then, right, that a people became legible, right? Mm-hmm. That the people came out of that. I think it's important to trace our becoming as Latinos to the becoming of the so-called New World, right? The Americas.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that because you were saying earlier, you know, we've been a mixture of slavery, rape, and just chaos in general. You look at us today and you look at us in the past, we've always struggled with identity because of that. I'm mestizo and black. My mom's side of the family, you'd see them and you think they're African American.
Yeah,
like, you know, and
sure.
Then my other side of the family is full indigenous.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have friends and other family members who are completely white.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and such a unique mixture that it puts you in a place where you don't know where or how to identify.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's within your own family. And I'm saying this because that is my familial situation as well. My sister, very light-skinned. My brother, dark. My brother identifies as a black Dominican. I'm in the middle. You know, mm-hmm. My mom is white-presenting. My dad was black, a black Dominican. So within our own families, I think, and a lot of Latinos can speak to this and relate to this, as you just made an example of, are constantly trying to figure out, okay, if race in this country is defined as the phenotypic qualities of a person and in relation to one's skin color, then do I fit this particular U.S. version of whiteness? Mm-hmm. And if you don't, then where do you fall? Or do you fit this particular version of blackness? There's a gray scholar named Lourdes Garcia Peña, who has coined this concept, hegemonic blackness. It's like, you know, the U.S.'s version of blackness is the version of blackness that the entire country is supposed to sort of live up to. But if you go to other places like Italy, right, or the Dominican Republic, or anywhere in Latin America, blackness is defined differently, especially in the Dominican Republic, where we have a really complex history of sharing the island with Haiti, the first free, you know, black republic. And so blackness in the Dominican Republic is basically defined as Haitian, right? And so a black American here, right, would probably be an Indio in the Dominican Republic. That's mm-hmm. just to give you an example. But I think that you're right. What you're getting at is that because, and as Jessica, you mentioned, we are an incredibly diverse group of people racially, right? Not just ethnically, like racially, we are everything. We're mm-hmm. Asian, indigenous, black, white, and everything in between. Because of that, it's really difficult for us, I think, to subscribe to one racial category. And I think that society often forces us to do that. And think about how we sign our census. Are you black? Are you are you white? Right? It's not that simple. You know, I got a long story, mm-hmm. right? And I think, and this is something I've struggled with, and I think it's okay to have a long story, to say, yeah, I am mestizo, my father is black. Let me just tell you who I am. It's that kind of story.
It's like we don't fit into boxes.
Exactly.
We don't fit into boxes, and the original term, whether it was Hispanic or Latino, you mentioned on the Census Bureau, it forced us to try to fit into a box, and it's not working. It didn't mm-hmm. work then, and it's still not working.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I maybe want to return to that comment that you brought up about the United States arriving on us. I was referring to the U.S.-Mexico War and the signing of the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, right, where the entire southwestern part of the United States, which belonged at some point to the Spanish, then to Mexico, but after the war was ceded to the United States. Mexican nationals, Mexican people living in the southwestern United States were now American. They were promised under Article 9 of the treaty citizenship. Like, okay, now you're, which meant they were promised whiteness because that's what constituted citizenship at the time. We're talking about mid 19th century, 1845, right? Like, so that's what it was. And so, you know, you have a people that are like, well, I'm Mexican or I have Spanish ancestors. Oh, now you're American. And you have to be American if you want to keep that land, right? Mm-hmm. You want to keep that land, you got to be. So it's, race is a social construct. I think we have to keep that in mind and take that with a grain of salt. Like those boxes, they're boxes. That's it, right? They're supposed to make sense of or give a broader picture of a society that's trying to, coexist with other, just exist. And so sometimes the individual gets left out. And this is, I think, an issue among Latinos, I think. I think, for a very, very long time, I think that we haven't paid enough attention to black Latinos, I think, in that tradition. Like, mm-hmm. black Latinos always been. In fact, before white Latinos. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Once we embrace our enormous, diversity, I think we can embrace ourselves too.
Right, yeah, because we kind of do it to each other, right? We've fallen into this concept of who is more Latino. Who,
that's so true.
Right? Mm-hmm. It comes down to language. It comes down to skin color, struggle, how we arrived here. Were you born here? Were you not? That makes you more or less. So I guess one question I have for you, knowing all of this, if you had a magic wand, what stereotype amongst us would you get rid of if you could?
Oh my goodness. I feel like I am setting myself up if I answer that question.
Take your time. Think about it.
I mean, honestly, it's hard to say. One thing that you got me thinking about is, like, what is an authentic Latino, authenticity in our in our traditions? Like, and then that makes me think, like, what is a Latino person if it's, our ability to speak Spanish? And how good do you speak Spanish? Or how bad do you speak Spanish? Because sometimes speaking bad Spanish, it's like, oh, you're really, like, Latinized.
Yeah, forget that they're trying.
Yeah, you're not even trying.
Sounds bad.
Immigration too. Like, when did you come here? Oh, you came here at 6? I came here at 10, I'm a little more than you are.
I think while you think about that, I think it's, as Latinos, we're going through a rapid change, kind of like technology, right? Like, for example, it's hard for my mom to understand me because I've went past so many barriers that she couldn't go past, but she did the best that she could for me, right? And so she gave her 100% and got me to a point where I could break those barriers. So I think that question that Jessica asked also has to do with the fact that we're constantly growing. And for example, like, my kids are going to be way more academically smart than I am. They're going to go way past what I've done, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to also not think about, you were born here. You have, a lot, you're limited less than someone who wasn't, right? Mm. Or someone who knows los dichos, right? Las frases that we grow up on, you know, and so it's like, we're also that's also part of that identity thing and how misunderstood we even are with each other, because we don't have a lot of us don't have that like family of five generations of business owners and fathers and husbands, and you know, we're the ones actually getting through and making those, you know, those happen, those that generational wealth and that you know, generational knowledge. And you know, there's things that that I'm still learning, right, that I'm like, I know my kids are gonna know, and there's things that I tell my parents now that, you know, they never even thought was possible.
I really like the idea of us as evolving, right? Because it gets us to what we were talking about earlier. Like, we've been here. We've been here before the creation of this country, and we're still here through it, right? I think our story as Latinos is one of, like, we want to leave a better future for who comes next, whether it's our children or the next generation. You know, we want to do that. My daughter is, she's half Korean, right? So she's a Korean Dominican. So in a way, you know, Latinos are incredibly creative. Like, we're creating, like, new Latinos all the time. Like, you know what I mean?
Like, we are very inclusive, even though we're kind of talking like how we're not.
Well, we are. I think we are inclusive because we literally are inclusive, like, who we are. Like, you know what I mean? We are just the embodiment of inclusivity, I think.
Absolutely.
So it makes entire sense.
Now, do you write about this? Because you're also an author. So do some of your books include these concepts? Or what are your... First, tell us, how many books do you have out? And, you know, what are the topics of each?
Nice. Yes, I do. So I have a few books out. I have one academic book, which is on, like, 19th century Hispanophones, right? But the stuff I'm really excited about is my creative work. So I have a poetry collection titled To the River We Are Migrants. It's a bilingual collection that explores grief, memory, loss of a father, loss of country, loss of language, but also, you know, the resilience of, like, you know, coming through okay on the other side. I have the memoir, Dique Dominican, that's coming out in January 31st. And that book is about the inheritance of anger. It's about colonial history, about anti-Haitianism. It's about the dictatorships, you know, which the Dominican Republic has had many, many of. It's about fatherhood, right? It's about becoming an academic, coming from parents who didn't finish, like, the sixth grade. You know what I mean? And then figuring out, like, how to be an academic. It's about imposter syndrome and just, you know, just existing. It's about a lot of things, right? And I'm publishing a novel in August of 2026, titled Bless Me, Papi. The title, it's about a young 13-year-old kid who loses his dad to cancer and summons his spirit through by saying the words bendición. Dominicans always say bendición. We shorten it to Sion Papi or bendición Mami. And then they'll, in return, they'll say que Dios te bendiga. It's like how we greet, you know, our you know, I guess... those are our seniors, right? So that's coming out in August, and I, you know, it seems like different books. They're in different genres, but all my work sort of meets in the same place. It's all thinking about memories, thinking about identity, it's thinking about the stories that I grew up with, right? You know, so yeah, it's all sort of mixed together.
How did understanding both cultures, the Dominican Hispanic culture and then growing up and learning and living in the American culture help you write these books?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my book, my memoir is titled Dique Dominican. And Dique, that's actually a dicho that we like to say. It means supposedly. Oh, Dique, you are a good basketball player. Dique. You know, I don't know. but Dique Dominican is like, I had never felt fully Dominican. And that kind of gets to the heart of your question. Like, I had to learn many, I had to maneuver in many different spaces. Like, you know, growing up in Brooklyn, it wasn't the quote-unquote American culture. It was like Brooklyn culture. Like, try to survive that. and then, you know, academic culture. Oh, now I have to be a college student. What does that even look like, right? And then moving to the Midwest. Oh, this is a different setting, right? So, like, but, you know, what one constant was the Dominican, you know, Hispanophone life, you know, that was tied to my family, my mom, you know, my grandparents. And that's always there. And I think that's always been the structure, the foundation. I hold everything, you know, that I'm learning in on top of that foundation. It won't go away. It's who I, you know, how it's who I am.
Right. So. It's, yeah. Really quick, dique, you guys say dique in Honduras. We say disque.
Oh, disque.
Oh, disque. Yeah. Oh, disque. Disque bueno. Disque sabe esto. Disque, you know.
That's so cool. So Dominicans, we just like to cut down words. So that's where it comes from. It comes from disque. You know what I mean? We just don't have time to say that. We say dique.
But we will be back for our third and my favorite segment where we eat. So what are we, do you know what we're going to have?
We have a treat for Allende, actually. Just a gift to his roots, one of his favorite foods, sancocho.
What? Let's go.
So we will be back to try some sancocho. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to my favorite part of this episode. We're here. This is Kevin Salinas.
And Jessica Molina. And Kevin, I don't think we're going to disappoint you today, or you, Allende. We have a special guest here in person and also here with her dish, La Señorita Orquídea, La Doña Orquídea. It's so nice to have you here.
Yes, thank you for having me here. Thank you so much.
So, go ahead.
Miss Luz Orquídea, tell us, ¿nos puede decir qué tenemos aquí? What do we have here in front of us?
We had in front of us a sancocho. That's a Dominican dish. It's like a soup and has so many ingredients that make you like feel like heaven.
Allende, this is your favorite food,
what?
Right? So
yes.
have you taken a bite? Was it heavenly?
Oh, yes, it was heavenly. It took me back to my mamá y mi papá back in Santiago. So thank you so much for bringing me this part of home, right? We were talking about home, and this is home right here. So thank you.
Do you get to have sancocho much?
No. So I have sancocho when my mom visits me. I have her make it, and then I freeze it for like a month, like, you know, and then I'll warm it up, and I'll eat it. So, no, this is so special. And we've got some mango.
That was your other favorite food that you said.
This is mango with the queso frito, salami. This is amazing. I don't eat this enough. And
so which one's the mango? Like the whole
the mashed plantains.
The mango is the mashed plantains.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And then queso frito.
Queso frito and salami.
Mm-hmm.
Dominicano.
Oh.
It's Dominican
yeah,
salami.
That's important.
Not spam.
No.
That's important. No. Dominican salami. It's true. Not the same.
Okay, so while Kevin and Allende eat a little bit, Orquídea, can you tell us, let's start with the sancocho. How do you make it?
For the sancocho, we use many ingredients. Most of them are like roots, like viandas, plátano, yuca, papa, potato, y ponemos todo esto junto, we put it together, and we cook the meat, we use meat, beef, we use meat, and we cook the meat first, and then we started to putting together the viandas.
Miss Luz, do you guys cook a lot with roots, yuca, malanga, just roots in general, or it's just sancocho?
We use the root all the time. For breakfast, that's the main ingredient that we use.
Really?
Yes.
For breakfast as well?
Yes. And for dinner, too.
Mm-hmm. In sancocho, ¿solo usas carne, or you can use chicken, shrimp?
Normally, we use, this is the... How I say? the original one.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The OG.
But we use like, we put meat, chicken, and pork. Mm. And sometimes we use, what else? You know, doesn't matter what you want to use, you know.
Y un sancocho aquí en Toledo versus un sancocho en Dominican Republic, ¿son muy diferentes en sabor?
No, no son tan diferentes. They are not that different. Normally, we find most of the ingredients now because when we moved here to Toledo 23 years ago,
wow,
we didn't find any ingredients. We didn't find any ingredient to make it.
Was it that they weren't here or you didn't know where to look yet?
They weren't here.
Yeah, nosotros también, yo soy hondureño, cocinamos mucho con yuca. And that's so hard to find sometimes. Malanga, you have to go to certain specific places, you know, and I am glad to see that, you know, Walmart now has yuca. So, you know, that hopefully that's a good sign that, you know, it's more of a demand now.
Mm. Yeah, most of the store, Meijer's, Kroger's, you can find some of the ingredients. And, you know, many stores here, like Hispanic stores too, we can find like San Marcos, and that is a store that is oriental store. They have most of the ingredients too.
Now talk to us also about the mangu. How do you make that? How do you pick the right, is it made out of plantains, right? How do you pick the right plantains to make it, and then how do you make it?
We buy like green plantain. It has to be green and fresh. And we boil with a little bit of salt, and we mash the plantain, and we put a little bit of, you know, what you want, but we don't put much. It's more like natural, like the plantain itself.
I've also tried, this is a Puerto Rican dish, tostones. Is there a Dominican name for tostones, or is it the same, or do you guys make that? Or
it's the same name because we are in the Caribbean. The countries in the Caribbean, we eat almost the same. We have like the same dishes and or similar, but we do the tostones or plátano frito.
Plátano frito.
También le llamamos así.
I'm so glad you brought up that it's the same in the Caribbean, because one of the questions I want to ask Allende, but now I get to ask both of you, is what is something that a Latino from the Caribbean, only Latinos from the Caribbean understand?
Arenque. I don't know. I don't know. What do you think? I don't know.
Mira, muchacho. Nosotros, los caribeños, hablamos muy rápido. Sí. We talk so fast. Only us can understand each other. Sometimes I'm translating for other people from different countries, and they say, what they say? And I say, oh, they say this and that. Oh, okay. Because we talk so fast, and we don't realize that we talk fast.
Oh, yeah.
We don't, you know, we talk and we don't think about that.
That is really true. That is a really good one. I can't. And we talk fast. And we dance a lot, I think. We dance fast.
Oh, yes.
I think that's another one. But we do talk very, very fast. Yeah.
So going back to the dish, the sancocho, what does this bring back memories of? You know, you mentioned it feels like home. But when you're envisioning yourself at home, and this question is for both of you, you know, you're having that plate of sancocho, like what day is it? What's the weather like? What are you experiencing?
You want to go?
If you want to start first.
I guess I can. What I think about right now is my grandmother, right, who made this in DR. I think about, she had this pot, this paila, very, you know, full of rice, white rice she would pour for us. And you know, and then she'll cut an avocado, you know, an aguacate, put it on the side.
By the way, we have avocado here.
Oh, we do.
No, it's okay. But
I skipped over. I'm sorry.
And my grandmother, and she passed 2 years ago, right? And she would make it with love. A lot of love went into this, right? So I think of her, I think of the love of grandmothers, and it almost reminds me of Los Días de Reyes, something like that. Like, it reminds me of like the holidays too, you know? Family, I guess, family, for sure.
And what about you, Arcadia?
Like, get together, because my grandmother used to make it every Saturday.
Oh.
It was like a religion.
Una tradición.
Una tradición, sí. En nuestra familia, de hacerlo cada sábado. Y ya nosotros sabíamos que el sábado había sancocho. Y cuando estaba lloviendo, cuando llueve, también es día de sancocho.
So anytime it rained, it was sancocho day, and every Saturday.
Yes.
So all the kids knew, hey, sancocho.
Sancocho, yes.
Now, I see that we have arroz blanco, we have white rice here. Do you actually put it in the sancocho, or do you, like, just eat it apart from, like... So, like, when we do, like, sopa de res, we'll, like, put the rice in. That's how you... But how do you...
Es a gusto de cada quien. Nosotros lo servimos aparte, pero cada quien, si le gusta adentro, pues es mejor así. Sabe mejor.
So it's really just like a, it depends on your preference, right? If you want the rice in, you put it in, and if you don't, you don't.
I recommend putting the rice in. Mixing it. It tastes good.
Oh my gosh, everybody's so busy eating that.
Esto está muy rico. It's very, very delicious.
Yes, thank you so much.
Muchísimas gracias.
And how much time did it take to make?
Como unas tres a cuatro horas, porque hay que esperar que la carne se ablande lo suficiente, about 3 or 4 hours.
Wow. Thank you so much. That means Senora Urquidio was at home for 3 hours. Just
no.
Oh my gosh. But look at Ayendi's face.
No tiene precio.
Exactly.
Now I see there's some queso frito. How is the queso frito made?
El queso frito lo compramos ya hecho. We buy it like in the store. And we only put it in a little bit of oil. And that's it.
You say that like it's easy, but but everybody here knows how wonderful this tastes, and you mentioned it feeling like love, right?
Oh yes.
So earlier in the podcast, and we're going to circle back to it, we were talking about the word of the day, right? So I'm going to ask everybody here, now that we've had the conversations about searching for identity, Latinos as a whole, our history, what is everybody's take now on the variety of words? The Latino, Latina, Latine, Latinx. You know, where do you stand and what do you think it speaks to our community? Kevin, you want to go first?
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, it's really where you how you identify yourself. It's kind of like this rice question, right? Whether you want it in the soup, outside of the soup, if you want to just eat the rice first. So I think as far as Latino, Latina, Latinx, it's really about truly finding your own identity and using that word as what identifies you.
I love that. I couldn't have said it any better. Latino, Latinx, it's a sancocho, right? Like it's just all of us, right? And there's variety. And regardless of what you eat or what you choose to identify as, it's love, it's family. And I think that's one thing that Latinos can definitely exude. Even when we're strangers, we come and we bring that. Like this is, yeah, but.
Yeah, I love that you said even when we're strangers, because this is your first time meeting Urquidia.
Yes.
And it was almost like you knew each other. Like the second that you saw her face, you were like, yes, home.
Yeah.
I think despite all of the chaos and everything that we go through, just as a Hispanic community, It's what keeps us together, really. At the end of the day, is we all have similar visions, similar goals, and we all want the best for each other.
Yes.
Even though there is division sometimes, but at the end of the day, we see each other out in public, and we you automatically get reminded as to why we're all here.
And we are Latino. We are all of us together. We are Latino. Even if we're different, we all come together. when we need to be Latino. And mm-hmm. I think that's powerful. You're never alone when you have that group, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Absolutely. And that reminds me again of your publications, IND. You mentioned that you have two books coming out, right? And there is an event happening at the University of Toledo. Can you share?
Yes. So I will be holding a book launch for my memoir, Dique Dominican, that's the title of it, on February 12th, 2026, from 3 to 4:30 p.m. It's open to the public. It's at the Carlson Library. Just go to the main desk and ask where the reading is, and they'll direct you to the reading. That's at the University of Toledo Carlson Library. Just come by, say hello. You don't have to stay for the whole thing. It'll be great to see some people there.
That's so exciting. I'm so excited for you, and I'm so excited for all of us that we were able to have this conversation today.
So, yeah, no, everybody, February 12th at University of Toledo. You know, that's how do you say it?
Dique.
Dique Dominican.
Just drop your S.
Yeah, I know.
Dique Dominican.
You know, but that wraps it up for today. Thank you, everybody. Luz, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for, thank you for taking, 3 hours to cook us this delicious meal. Honestly, thank you very much. Ayandi, thank you very much for spending this time with us. You know, Jessica as well, thank you.
Always a pleasure.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So that wraps up our second episode. Please join us next time on La Prensa Habla. Thank you very much.
The Local Thread is a production of WGTE Public Media. Episodes can be heard weeknights at 7 on FM 91 or anytime at WGTE.org.